Welcome to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
Judy Nathans.
And today is June 11th.
I know, it's just time. 2019.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
I think it is.
Creeping along. I think for me, when classes are out in the little interim time between classes.
You have a very academic schedule.
I am very much on an academic schedule. Profession. And my spring semester is done. And my summer school semester is coming up in a couple of weeks. So this is sort of my flexible time. So.
I think, you know, everybody sort of grew up with that. Summer's off. And even if you, aren't an academic, there's something about summer you're supposed to be. That's when people take vacations. It's like.
It's true. We're like dogs. You know, we get trained to a certain way of being.
Yeah, in some other countries, they work schools all year round.
I remember the first time when I graduated college and then I decided to go live next to the railroad tracks in Flagstaff, Arizona.
Oh my gosh, I know where those are.
And then September came around. Something was missing. Lost. What am I supposed
to
do?
But there's a university right there. Was it there then?
I used to spend a lot of time at the university. Yeah. I used to tutor math, physics, and chemistry to anybody who'd listen to me.
Wow. How long were you there?
I actually tutored for beer. I can actually say I used to tutor like barmaids and things from some of the local pubs in Flagstaff, Arizona.
So how long did you live there?
Beer and blankets, actually. I had blankets too. I only lived there for maybe 3.5 months before I headed back to go to graduate school. So.
Oh, I see. It was like a summer.
No, actually, at the time, I wasn't so sure. I finished college. I didn't want to go directly to graduate school.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So you were taking that first semester.
Yeah, I could have stayed there for much longer, but then somebody said, "What are you doing here? You should be teaching Radcliffe women." That's what they actually said. I said, "Well, okay. I kind of can't argue that. It was actually kind of a good idea." So I applied to graduate school.
At MIT.
I applied to one graduate school and got in, and I figured
wasn't that also your undergraduate?
No.
Where did your undergraduate?
Queens College, University of New York.
That's right.
Yeah, and I just said, well, if I get in, I'm going to be a graduate student, and if I don't get in, I'll, you know, just find a job.
And how long did it take you to get your, and you are, wait a minute, you're not a PhD, are you?
Yes.
How come no one ever calls you Dr. Winters?
Because
you don't. Go along with that stuff. Right?
Honestly, there are so many PhDs in Cambridge that if everybody started.
But you know what's interesting? I don't think people know that about you.
Really? Well, I don't.
Now you
I don't push
he's
it.
He's a
but,
PhD.
You know, the thing is there. Are, you know, sometimes when people push it a little too much, it's kind of an insecurity.
At least they put it after their name. You never put it after. Your
no,
name.
I never put it there. No.
It would change your identity, I think.
Maybe a little bit. Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Why, thank you. It's
and
been
how
a while.
Long did it take you?
It took a while. It was sort of two instances, at MIT and then went and worked for a few years and then went back and finished the degree at Boston University.
I was going to say, you did something at Boston University.
Yeah, no, and I taught at Wellesley College for several years in between, too. So,
Very accomplished.
Interrupted Robert. Journey.
Yes.
That's okay.
And politics is your avocation.
It's my hobby. It's
your
just
hobby.
A hobby.
Municipal, historical data.
It's
Whatever.
True. Actually, I was updating my CV the other day.
Oh, curriculum
vitae. And I said, well, you know, it's interesting. Should I actually put in the fact that I do like a, I'm do like a I'm an unofficial technical consultant?
Yes.
For election commission. I said, I guess that's kind of what I do. So maybe I should put
that
in.
You just put consultant. Doesn't mean it's paid or not.
It's true. It's
you
true.
Know, people use the word consultant for everything.
Absolutely.
What are you? I'm a consultant. You know, whether they're paid or not. So.
I consult with people even if they don't want me to consult with them. So.
Okay, so back to mundane.
Back to the mundane actually.
Yeah.
One thing worth mentioning, kind of a significant moment for Central Square.
Oh, yes.
All right, so many years, like 25 years in the making.
Were there actually BIDs? Define it.
All right. So
business improvement district.
Yeah, because I actually spoke to this at the hearing.
I heard you.
Last
I saw
night.
You.
All right. The back in the mid 1990s there was actually early to mid 1990s the state legislature created this legislation that would allowed for local business areas to organize themselves as business improvement
districts.
What
were they modeling after? That's what I want to know. What's the history of that in the country?
You know, actually, I don't know. I don't know where the first one was, but I do know they existed prior to that.
Okay.
And I don't know how widespread it was in Massachusetts. I know there are some other places that are business improvement districts, including Downtown Crossing in Boston. But the thing is that in Central Square, you know, we had this thing called the Central Square Committee. Several of I think we had 16 people on it. Mm. Our basic job was sort of trying to work with an landscape or a planning architect person, mm-hmm. urban design person for doing some reconfigurations in Central Square, which involved lane reductions, widening sidewalks, planting trees.
In the 90s?
Yeah, about mid-1990s.
Okay.
And, all right, so we, you know, made the recommendations. Most of what we wanted got done. Not everything, but most of it got done.
What was the most major thing that people would know
today? The lane reductions. You know, people actually forget that they used to be...
Oh, two and two, right?
It was three and two.
Oh, no.
Plus
three
parking
coming
lanes.
Three
yeah.
coming in?
If you counted from curb to curb, there were three travel lanes one way to the other way and two parking lanes. So that's seven lanes.
You know why those don't exist anymore? There were no bicycles then. People didn't ride them as much.
No,
right?
I bicycled then, but the thing is, they were not. They didn't have bicycle lanes, and that was actually a part of it. Really being painted into the streets was around then as well.
Wow.
So, and in fact, we had various plans. One of which was to put a median, you know, which some people liked.
Yeah.
I wasn't a big fan, but we were trying to have a discussion, and then that's where we had one famous meeting where the deputy city manager just walked in and said, "Look." You're not getting your median because we have to put in the bike lanes if we don't, we'll get sued. The thing is, there was the Conservation Law Foundation was playing hardball because of the city's voluntary compliance with certain provisions of the Clean Air Act, and there had been a parking freeze. So, you know, the city needed to make, you know, basically had to show that it really was trying to promote alternative transportation. Bicycles being one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting how even that discussion has changed so much over the years.
Yeah.
We used to talk all about the devil of single occupancy vehicles.
Oh.
You know, it's funny, you know, that was like, you know, all the rage was, you know, people should be doing car sharing or using alternate means of transportation.
Yeah.
But I don't hear anybody talk about that anymore.
Car sharing, they have Lyft and Uber. That's
I know, but the thing is that, right, so that's all, yeah, that all came later.
Yeah.
So it is sort of one of these weird ironies or weird circumstance mm-hmm. that with all the efforts of the city of Cambridge to promote alternate transportation and get people onto bicycles and get people to live closer to where they work and work closer to where they live, et cetera, and then Uber and Lyft came along and pretty much blew it all out of the water because now there's at certain times of the day, it's more than 10% of all vehicles on the roads are Ubers and Lyfts.
Especially on weekends when people are going out and they want to drink and all that stuff.
Yeah,
but,
we were trying to like reduce commuters and now people are driving in from out of state in order to pick up fares with Uber and Lyft.
Because that's where they know
it's
they
lucrative.
Can make money.
It's lucrative,
and,
yeah.
And the idea that people are going to give, I guess there was some discussion we'll talk about later last night because one of the orders had to do with
transportation.
People are, you know, you're going to tell people they can't use Uber and Lyft certain hours. That's is kind of the gist of it. Was like they should be using public transit. Well, I don't think you can tell people what to do.
You know, and the truth is, all your plans sometimes get completely twisted by people's actual wishes.
Yeah.
You know, so for example, as Councillor Kelly often points out, you know, you build mm-hmm. all the infrastructure for bikes, and then people start taking scooters.
Right.
Or they decide that after a while that, you know, like I'm of the belief that, you know, and again, I'm a lifelong cyclist, but the truth is that there are a lot of other factors for convenience and weather, et cetera, that basically...
Even with all the bike lanes you can have, there's a lot of cars, and some people just certain ages are not safe on that.
Yeah, my feeling is that the... bicycle usage sort of will level off in certain corridors, certain places.
Maybe, but they're hiring more and more people, and they're building more and more transit-oriented apartments, and you're going to have more and more single professionals.
Right, but the thing is, if it's transit-oriented development, chances are people... I mean, it's actually much more people. The biggest increase is in pedestrianism. So people are actually walking to work.
That would be
more.
Great, yeah.
Yeah, so that's actually pretty... That's more significant even than the bicycle increases. But, you know, but the thing is that one day, you know, 10 years from now, maybe the driverless vehicles will be all around.
Please.
I don't know.
I don't want to be around for that. I don't want to be in Cambridge for
that. Could happen one day.
I just find that, to me, is the ultimate in no accountability and irresponsibility.
Right, but if the cost structure is such that it's not only convenient but also makes sense financially, you know, then there's going to be a lot of people who are just basically just going to, you know, go. And
I don't want an individual. I could see it for a bus fleet or something, maybe with. You still have to have somebody on board, don't you?
You know.
So then what makes it driverless?
Well, I mean, it depends, you know. I mean, some people think you could just say, should just be driverless, you know, some headless horseman comes along.
Not when you have a, if it's not all uniform, if you still have, you know, motorized vehicles out there and bicycles and real people, I just don't see how it's going to work.
Put not thy total faith in technology.
Well,
you know, even robots sometimes can't recognize a little kid running across the street, you know, so... So I'm a little skeptical, but anyway, my whole point is that simply that you can plan all you want.
But something's going to come along and disrupt that.
Just completely change it.
You need to have a broader view.
Yeah. So actually, I was seeing it was a little bit of an internet discussion today because, you know, all the rage was promoting bicycle infrastructure, but now bus only lanes are starting to grow in popularity. And that seems to be getting implemented in places. I saw one for a piece along Brighton Avenue over Alston Brighton today.
Yeah, it was just there. I saw that.
Yeah, that's actually going to strike this week.
So
these will be like shared between buses and bikes. So let's see, is that compatible with the protected bike lane mindset? Maybe not. But maybe it's better.
You can't have protected bike lanes everywhere. You just can't.
Right. So anyway, it's kind of funny to me how everybody, you know, jumps on the latest bandwagon, but then a few years later, everything changes anyway. So just be flexible, I say, be flexible. So anyway, so back to Central Square.
Yeah.
So 25 years in the making, back in the mid-90s when we talked about things, you know, and did some changes in Central Square, we talked about, well, maybe we should really become a business improvement district. And so people talked about it, and some people like George Metzger and others kind of worked toward that end. But I think what I said last night at the meeting is that it was a bit like herding cats because there was the property ownership in Central Square is not like it is in Kendall Square where there's like two or three owners.
Yeah,
there was 100 of them, and you know,
it's
and they were
smaller.
Family trusts where, you know, there was a family that ran a business and owned a building 100 years ago,
and couldn't even agree with.
And now there's 28 cousins, each of whom are getting a little income every month.
Right.
And how do you actually get any of these people together to come up with decisions or sign a paper to be part of a business?
So why did that change? You know,
that's
sold the properties. Or?
Some did sell. Certainly,
are still some large property like.
There are some people like Michael Simon or the Carl Barron's family still owns some. The Morris Nagar's family owns some property.
Quite a bit, yeah.
Yeah, so there are some people who own more than a few properties.
They also live, they're accountable.
To whatever degree the ownership is, you know, are people we know and you can talk to and you can reason all the better.
Yeah.
But it wasn't always that way, and it's still not quite that way, but... Through some, I really sort of think of it as almost like a shared belief that maybe things can be better. And then slowly but surely, and, you know, again, a lot of credit goes to Michael Monestey, you know, who's the executive director of Central Square Business Association for shepherding the thing through, getting a lot of buy-in. And it's not just Michael. I mean, there were others as well who really...
on the board and counselors.
So people, I mean, the counselors were supportive, but they were not doing the lifting. You know, and the city officials, city administration were supportive and certainly helped iron out any of the details of how this is going to work. But
what is the gist of it? What does it mean for property? They have to pay into a fund, right?
Right. So they were estimating about...
If they're part of the percentage that did not go... It's 51% and it becomes a district?
Right, and we got more than...
You got 70-something,
There's like two thresholds you have to meet.
Okay.
One is the amount of assessed value you have to break, I think 51% of that.
Okay.
And 60% of the ownership.
Oh, okay,
So we soared past both of those goals.
You did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
yeah,
I think...
73%.
It was basically...
I don't know.
I think nobody was going to want to proceed with this if they were just squeaking by the legal minimum.
No.
They want a real buy-in, and they're getting it, you know. And there was some real brilliance in orchestrating this taste of the bid that actually gave people a bit of an idea that this could actually be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you know, maybe all the stars were in alignment. You know, I'm going to start sounding more like Peter Valentine now, but the stars were in alignment, and people started believing that things, you know, that the future could be better, and that in fact cooperation and you know, all of the, you know, just having a shared future that people could believe in was possible.
I do have to say that having like Mass and Main go up and this other building, maybe people that felt Central Square was sort of going
another
way, they see, oh wait, this is really on the move. We want this.
No, I think
I think that has a lot to do.
I agree that people reinvesting in the square sends a good signal to the business community
that we believe in this.
We want to get in on this. One of the interesting ironies is that actually Mass Main had not signed on to the bid. They were one of the holdouts, but I heard that like right on the last day they signed on at MIT and Novartis.
Well, they would have to pay the biggest fees, right?
Well, yes and no.
Based
on assessed value,
it's
true. But
the assessed value is pretty millions over there.
Right. I mean, they worked out a formula so that everybody sort of pays for the first.
Is MIT considered a corporation, or is it considered a nonprofit, or education?
Well, they are. I'm a little unsure, so I'm not.
They have separate divisions. They have a property.
The thing is that it's from a point of view of taxation, real estate taxation.
It's all commercial property that they
all
own.
Of the educational used. Properties are non-taxable,
but most of the ones they have in Central Square are commercial.
That's right. So MIT owns a lot of, you know, taxpaying.
I didn't realize they own the Central Square Theater complex.
Yes, and MIT is one of the biggest taxpayers of the city.
Wait, do they own this building, the CCTV building? They might, because
yes, part of it? They do. We are in an MIT owned building. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's true. So the thing is that I think when the bids it was becoming absolutely clear. That the bid was going to happen. I'm not going to read people's minds here, but you almost have to believe that people said, well, we don't want to not be part of this now.
Oh, right.
So come on, let's just all get together here. And, you know, and anyway, the proposal went through, it sailed through, it was a great presentation, unanimous approval by the city council, which was expected.
So where does it go now?
Well, now,
there's
some legal stuff you have to kind of, officially set up the 501c3.
Oh, right. And I guess the Central Square Business Association will become a part of.
So they have certain assets.
Right,
you know,
that will get transferred.
And they get transferred to the bid. I think it's been recognized for some time that that you can't just, flip everything over to the bid because there's still a place for political advocacy. I mean, for example, if there are business owners who really feel strongly about having some zoning to permit certain things.
So they would need like an association that is separate from just the running of the district.
Right. So a continuation of the soon to be former Central Square Business Association will be created.
But then what would Michael's role be? Would he still be the executive director?
Michael, I believe, the presumption here is that Michael will be the executive director of the Business Improvement District. And that there will be several of the actual property owners will then.
Okay.
You know, the thing is, I don't think there's much need for any actual financial resources for just the continuing advocacy group for the Central Square property owners or business owners. They can do that like any neighborhood association. They could just get together and talk and advocate.
So instead of the businesses now paying a yearly dues or something to the Central Square, they're now going to be paying
into the bid.
So they're actually going to be generating a lot more money than
about $1.2 million a year to run things.
So I would bet the salary is going to go up a little bit, maybe.
Presumably.
So who sets all that? A board? Or
They're going to be establishing a board of directors to do this.
Who then actually, I guess, open it up to see who's going to. You can't automatically just switch over.
Right. Now, I mean, and so what will they actually be doing?
Yeah.
Some of that's still for the future to decide. But, there was a big emphasis on just adding on all the supplemental services over and above what the city will be doing. And
so that also came up because, wait a minute, isn't, DPW empties trash? I see these ambassadors as doing a little bit more than that. I don't know exactly.
It was a legitimate question to ask.
Yeah. People asked it, I think.
You know, and I think the city manager made it very clear that, in fact, if anything, the city was actually going to be doing more.
Right.
But the thing is that the city is not in a position to be there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Well, neither are the ambassadors, though, unless their schedule's going to be different.
Well, I don't know how they'll do it, but the thing is that, you know, the management of the Business Improvement District is such that they could have people sort of minding the store at all sorts of hours when the city can't do it. I would suspect,
especially if you're a big business and you're paying that much money that you didn't pay before, you're going to want
You will want some. And I, you know...
We'll be interested to see how this all pans out.
I mean, actually, when I was heading over to that meeting last night, I was thinking about basically saying that too, which is that, you know, if I was a paying participant of this bid, I might actually be pretty demanding.
$61,000 a year, yeah.
Yeah, I would be demanding. Yeah. I would say, you know, 24-hour
coverage.
I'm paying for this. You know, I want to get my services. And I had some concerns about, well, what if after a few years people felt they weren't getting those services? Could you end the bid? And they actually made that clear. It's basically, there's a sunset clause so that
if this isn't working out,
it's basically a 5-year initial period.
Oh, I see.
And if at the end of 5 years people go, "Meh, this isn't all it was cracked up to be," it could just pass.
Other than keeping things clean and neat and safe, what is the job of a business improvement?
Do you
unite and have events together?
I think we all remember days when the restaurant associations would actually, the International Restaurant Associations put together the Central Square World's Fair.
Vaguely.
So the thing is there have been initiatives like that that have happened in the past, and then I guess John Clifford was disaffiliated from Green Street Grill. True. So, you know, and there were other reasons that it was hard to pull that off. So now
you might have an entity. Well, the Central Square Business has been doing that.
I mean, right. We've actually been getting a taste of the bid for a couple of years now.
Exactly.
The festivals, and there are some other interesting ones coming up. I hear that there's going to be sort of a the official Beatles cover band and basically is actually going to do an event down University Park. I don't know when, but it'll be this summer.
But it's not scheduled yet.
It may be, but I'm not sure. The thing is, things like that. There's the activities like the Central Flea that and the food truck events that they do over on the Prospect Street lot.
And that's been ongoing.
And they're coming up again.
I thought it was at University Park they were doing them.
Well, they're going to be doing both now. They're going to be depending on what the event is. Yeah.
So that kind of gives you a taste of what.
Yeah.
With more resources and more help, you can do now.
You can orchestrate things. Yeah.
And that's, Michael is very smart too.
He's been really great at actually making those things happen.
Because then you say, hey, you want more? This is what you're going to get.
Yeah. You know, part of what I said at the meeting, really the main thing I kind of decided I felt like saying last night was that, you know, over and above all the things that are written out specifically in the Business Improvement District documents, the fact is that when you get any group of people and they all are now part of a team who are working collaboratively, you know, because they're paying money into it, they've got a vested interest, it opens up other possibilities, like people just acting cooperatively to deliver a lot of the things people have wanted out of Central Square for years. And you know, we have so many of these intercept surveys and various neighborhood surveys asking what do people want in terms of retail and activity and everything else. And, you know, but it's not an easy thing for some people and some city staff to sort of say, well, this is what people want, and then have business owners just sort of comply. It's just not an easy thing to do, and you're always dependent on having a single, very generous property owner stepping up to go and deliver the goods.
And
right
now, it's shared.
Now you have all this a sense of a shared future where you know it's going to lift all boats, presumably. So you could potentially, and again, this is not part of the documents or anything, but you very much have the potential that some of the properties that MIT own, maybe they'll be the ones that'll be providing affordable women's clothing at some store, or maybe there'll be an Asian food court may appear in some building, something like that, because people have expressed for that.
We have a lot of stuff. I know.
Yeah. Okay. Right, but the thing is that people have expressed desires for things, and it's not just retail in the past. And
some of it's entertainment areas and things like that.
Right. Yeah. So the people in the bid can now actually work cooperatively with the various property owners.
Well, hopefully they'll come up with a directory.
Come up
like
with some ideas.
Do, the local business in North Cambridge. They're all.
They'll do that.
They pay into that. Now this is maybe you can do both, but. Just Central Square businesses, like a whole directory.
Yeah, the Porter Square Neighbors Association actually puts out a kind of a brochure of businesses on the avenue to sort of help promote
that's
them.
That's a little different. And then you have the Cambridge Local First, which actually encompasses all of Cambridge, but this would be just for Central.
Right, so you can now have the bid could very much do some marketing for right. Central Square
to advertise themselves.
You're right. Not only as sort of a place for nightlife, but also as a place for daytime retail.
Rentals.
Yeah.
Rentals,
oh yeah.
Everything. Yeah.
So
lots of possibilities.
You know, one of the afterwards last night. So some of us got together afterwards, and I was asking him, "Do you think okay, if Central Square is doing this, this is the first one we're doing mm-hmm. in the city." Do you think some other neighborhoods or business districts might now
want to? In Cambridge?
Yeah, might want to do it as well. And I think mm-hmm. the answer, the general consensus was, yeah. But the thing is, like if you're down Kendall Square and you only have basically three owners, yeah. it's not that hard to orchestrate yeah. something like this. Yeah. If you're a place like Porter Square where there's disparate ownership, it's probably a bit more of a challenge.
Except there is the Cambridge Local First, which has started out of Porter Square. So I don't know enough about the structure, but they do buy into that association and
yeah.
pay a certain amount.
Well, they have
so.
A good neighborhood
and plus they
business
have the neighborhoods,
cooperation.
Yeah, so that may not
yeah.
even need it.
My big question is, you know, people like to gripe about mm-hmm. some of the ups and downs with a big, out of city investment coming into mm-hmm. Harvard Square. Is Harvard Square able to orchestrate something like this?
Don't you have the Harvard Square Business Association?
You do. But the thing is that, you know, you always have a problem, just like we have with the Central
Harvard
Square.
Harvard is the business district. I mean, that's really what a lot of it is.
Right. So the thing is, it's not so easy. If Harvard has
yeah.
a strong interest,
yeah, I don't think that's
Trinity
important.
Properties has a yeah. strong interest.
Harvard
or some
owns
of,
like half, I'm learning, they
yeah.
own half of the stuff.
But
the
new owners of the Abbott building have a big interest. Yeah. These mm-hmm. various other ones who've now dropped phenomenal amounts of money have interest in here. I don't know. It's so easy to
Gerald
work
Chan
out a corporation.
And Harvard and maybe these other really own Harvard Square.
It's getting that way.
And some of them are really good landlords. And they,
right.
They,
but I don't know that they. I don't know that they all have a shared vision of things yet.
True, but
I
don't
think that will happen, but not right away.
Yeah. Anyway, Central Square.
You know, hope springs eternal. Yes. Anyway, we're Central Square. We're
right.
number one.
Right.
We
well,
beat him to the punch, and yeah. we're all looking forward to the whole
okay.
thing. So,
all right.
We'll
see
be back in
segment.
A few seconds on Inside Out.
Yeah.